Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to I Don't Get It, the Pop Culture Get Off My Lawn cast. Welcome to this wonderful, wonderful, lovable podcast wherein two late 40s curmudgeons bravely, boldly, and otherwise stare down the prospect of their looming, impending, having arrived, entertainment irrelevance. Hello, I am your co-host. My name is Noah Tarno. I'm the founder and the senior quiz master of The Big Quiz Thing, the trivia game show spectacular. And joining me, my co-host this week and every week.
For 1 week only. My name is Bill Scurry, by the way. And I am the founder and proprietor of American Caesar Enterprises, which is, I think, most well known for being the inheritor of the powerful legacy of Sam Breakstone.
Sam Breakstone was Breakstone sour cream?
Yeah, and cottage cheese. It was all sorts of clotted cream-based products, man. It was an empire.
Right. Was that just a New York area thing, or was that national?
No, it's national. I mean, it was based in New York, okay. But it's national. Now, here's why I remember it is because Sam Breakstone, the actor who played Sam Breakstone in the commercial, was also the Dunkin' Donuts guy, too. And he had such a characteristic...
Are you serious?
Yeah, he looked like Mario.
He was Fred the Baker.
He looked like Super Mario. He was a squat dude with a broom mustache. Yeah.
Time to make the donuts guy. Yeah, Fred the Baker. That guy's real name, I knew it. It's like Mike something.
Yeah,
I swear to God.
Oh, he was an actor. He was in a Woody Allen. He was in a Woody Allen movie called "Everything You Want to Know About Sex But Afraid to Ask." And like I saw that when I was like 12 or 13 years old. And other than the fact that it was filled with randy behavior, I'm like, oh, that's the fucking Breakstone guy. That's Sam the Baker or Fred the Baker guy. It was just
Fred the Baker.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
All right, so your reference this week is Breakstone's cottage cheese
for the sour, I'm guessing,
is out of business now.
For the sour cream experience of a lifetime. No, actually, they're still extant. Yes. It is still a producing business for sure.
Really?
The finest cream cheese. Fuck that Philadelphia shit. Stay with my company.
Try our creamy cottage cheese and smooth sour cream.
Yeah, man.
At breakstones.com. Yeah. Walton, New York, established 1882. How about that?
Tradition of excellence.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So I don't get it. You say you're carrying on the legacy, but the legacy lives on. So
yeah.
you run this company is what you're saying?
You know, I'm kind of the guy behind the guy behind the sour cream.
So Breakstone's Cream Products is the company is a division of American Caesar Enterprises.
Yeah, to be fair, it's a very small division. Like we have a lot of other irons in the fire, but yeah,
you guys are huge, man. Oh my God. You have fingers in every pie.
Well, to be fair, we have Temptee is one of ours. Land O'Lakes. It's mostly cream related products.
Land O'Lakes is still, you know, Land O'Lakes hit the news a few years ago when they took the Native American off the package.
And the boobs when you fold the package. My God.
And I've seen some right-wing memes about that, saying like, well, the price is doubled, but we took the Indian off the package, so I guess liberals are happy.
Yeah.
Like, yes, all our problems are
solved. We are. We are happy.
Okay. What are we talking about this week? Speaking of grievance, this topic was suggested by friend and listener of the show, Mary Reeves. Hello, Mary. And neither of us had heard of this, but it's out there. It's happening. And it's a little more controversial, a little less fun than a lot of our topics. Oh, by the way, side note, speaking of friends suggesting topics, I got a text the other day from sometime listener Alice Swinson asking us why we haven't looked at Beyonce's new album yet.
Yeah, good. Yeah. We're going to follow up on that. Sure.
Yeah, we got to follow up on that. Anyway, no, she actually asked me if we were going to, and I sent her the link of when we did it 2 weeks ago.
But this is less fun.
This is less fun than Cowboy Carter. This is something called the 4B movement. Straight out of South Korea, baby. And it is there's debate over how widespread it is, but it is a movement, it's a good word for it, among women in South Korea, a country of, I looked it up, 51.63 million people. Among the women of that country, they're basically saying that the patriarchy in their country is so toxic, women are treated so poorly that they're giving up on men. And it's not even trying to change things for the better. It's walking away from men. So the 4B movement, 4B refers to four things that these women say they are swearing off. Now, apparently in Korean, the term for no, it's also called the four no's. So the term for no in Korean is sort of a prefix bi, b. So the four things that they swear off are sex with men, which is Korean term for no sex is bisekasu. Bisexu. It's interesting. So that implies the word sex is basically the same in Korean as it is in English.
Or it was a borrow word from American influence, you know.
Because they didn't have sex in Korea until
it wasn't invented until 1938. Yeah.
It hadn't invented. There was no sexual intercourse in Korea. Yeah. No child rearing, bi chulsan. No dating men, bi yone. And by the way, just a blanket disclaimer for this whole episode, we're gonna mangle Korean throughout. I used to be able to count to 10 in Korean. I can't anymore, so don't look to me for any authoritative pronunciations. No dating men. And finally, no marriage with men, bihon. I feel like there's some overlap here, right? Like, how do you marry? Well, I guess you can marry men without having sex with them or without dating them. In fact, in their culture, apparently, there's a lot of... In their culture, it's considered marriage. In their culture... Sorry.
Thank you.
There's a lot of... matchmaking is really big. So I guess marriage with men without dating... Although matchmaking implies dating. It's arranged marriages, but there's no dating. All right, I'm all over the place here. But the four B's are no sex with men, no child rearing, no dating men, no marriage of men. So, you know, lesbians, have at it. Have a good time. They are giving up on men and in some respects, giving up on the future. And the term, the concept is traced to some, about 7 or 8 years, to YouTubers named Jung Seong and Baek Hana. They are credited with its origins and it draws some inspiration from a 2016 novel, huge best-selling hit in Korea called Kim Ji-young, Born 1982. That's the name of the novel.
It was translated into English. There was a review in the New York Times. Sure, it did make it to the States. Okay.
And there was even a movie of it in Korea. The author's name was Cho Nam-joo. And I read a plot synopsis basically about a very, very put-upon a young woman marries a man and just realizes, you know, even though he's a good dude, realizes her lot in life is pretty miserable. Similar movements that are tied in South Korea's version of the Me Too movement that is familiar here and something called the Escape the Corset movement, which is pretty self-explanatory by its name. I saw a stat that the 4B movement claims 4,000 members in 2019. I also saw stats that it's very unclear how many women in Korea subscribe to this, anywhere from 5,000 to 50,000. And, you know, we think of South Korea as a pretty modern, pretty, you know, high standard of living country. And I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's true. But apparently, as many issues as we have with the patriarchy, theirs are much worse. Here, I believe women on average earn 22% less than men. They're 31% less. One thing I did know is they're very heavy into plastic surgery there. The pressure to conform to, you know, physical standards of beauty. And that's women and men. I mean, you ever looked at BTS, any of these K-pop boy bands, those guys look like fucking, you know, automatons. It's disgusting. Korea ranks first on a per capita basis on plastic surgery with 13.5 cosmetic procedures performed per 1,000 individuals. They also have the highest rate of intimate partner violence among quote-unquote developed countries. The global average is 30% of intimate partner relationships have some level of violence. That shocks me. That's the global average. In South Korea, it's 41.5. And as of 2022, South Korea has a new president, a man named Yoon Suk-yeol. And he's basically their version of, I don't know if I say Trump, but like Putin. And he's very openly said he's going to stop women from working. And he's I don't know if he has abolished, there's a ministry of gender or something in the country. He's basically a right-wing reactionary. There's a good article about this in The Cut where they pointed to some instances of hypocrisy in legal system, you know, a man murdered a young woman in a public bathroom because she turned him down. And it was not classified as a hate crime. There are instances of men getting probation for, you know, sexually harassing women, getting upskirt shots, posting, you know, hate porn, things like that. Whereas flip the script, a woman without consent took a photo of a nude model in an art class, posted on the internet, and she got like 6 months in prison. And another thing that's very salient here is South Korea apparently has the lowest childbirth rate in the world. They are currently at 0.7 births per woman, per I don't know what it is. 0.78 is the rate compared to a global average of 2.3. I guess the idea is on the average, there are 2.3 babies to replace every person. In South Korea, there's only 0.78. So there's a lot of speculation that this movement, which is really only traced back to 2019, 2018, is responsible for it. Other people say it's the problems that we're facing here. It's hard. It's expensive to raise a child. It's hard to, you know, support yourself. It's economic factors. A lot of people are begging off having children, or at least a lot of people who think ahead. Hence, you know, you saw Idiocracy. It's turning into a documentary. It's the main thing here is it's drifted over here in some respect. I mean, we have our own versions of this, especially in Me Too. And Me Too is not quite the same, obviously. It's not a separatist movement. But I'm going to get into a bit. There have been feminist separatist movements in the United States in the past, going way back. But this is all over American social media now. There's no shortage of TikTok videos where American people comment on this. So while the 4B movement might not have a real toehold here in the U.S., there's certainly quite a bit of commentary. Women saying it's great. Men saying it's, you know, ungrateful, bitches who are just destroying themselves ultimately. And then women responding to those videos. I mean, you know, this is what TikTok does. Everyone turns into an asshole, right? Regardless of who's right or who's wrong. So there's definitely chatter about this. So Bill, you know, I suggested this to you. Mary suggested it to me. I suggested it to you. You dove in. We both watched some TikTok. Oh, wow. How that improved our week. What do you think of the 4B movement?
It should be pointed out, by the way, that Mary, like us, is a white person. She's not Korean, in fact. So she was an observer.
Yeah, she's not Korean either.
And not born in Incheon. Unlike us. Yeah.
She's Jewish like me. She's Jewish. She's the only Jew I know named Mary. But,
Well, the only one you know named Mary.
Not that Jew makes us closer to Korea. But
hey, Mary Magdalene was Jewish, wasn't she? I'm just saying. If you're looking for a comment.
Who knows?
Well, I think
who
this
cares?
Is,
does it matter now?
This is a weird confluence that we're talking about. Like the commentary, the chatter coming is on, like you said, it's on TikTok primarily. And it is a lot of white people who are sounding off, fair amount of Korean Americans. And so far as I know, the representative voice, you sent me a video recently of someone who's an actual Korean person who speaks, you know, flawless.
Korean.
Yeah. Corinna. Somebody who speaks flawless English and, you know, is essentially steeped in Western idioms. So, and she said something like her thing was a little bit of a pushback saying, it seems like this is popular on social media because everyone likes to have an opinion on something. She says, but traditional Koreans still chug on in the main mostly. And that this might be, as I write my notes here, it's a demographic drop in the bucket, one would assume, to the aggregate number. You said 50 million Koreans. You know, you're talking about 5,000 and 50,000 people. That's not going to grind a birth rate. By the way, there's a really interesting term statistically here I never heard before, something called a dead cross, which is that phenomenon you're discussing.
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess everyone has, you know, statisticians and demographers have to come up with a vocabulary for this. But the idea that when the deaths pretty much equal the births, you have a zero-sum growth where, I mean, every country thinks of it like we need to keep human beings being built or born or imported to make a labor class going onwards. You know, you need a future.
Yeah. And in this country, the people who are pushing for more humans to be born are not pushing for humans to be imported. If you
correct. Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. But that's one of the arguments for you know, an open, a more freer immigration, at least more logic to it, is that
also
bring in bodies.
Also, sorry to be blunt. Who's going to tend your garden? Who's going to clean your toilet? Rich guy.
One of the good ones. And so the Koreans are dealing. You know, the Koreans don't really have an immigration deal. I mean, people cross the border, but it is not a place where, you know, like that's the way we think about it as an ongoing issue. I mean, it is not necessarily, it doesn't have to be an issue. In America, we've sort of chosen to keep it as one, as a political gambit, which is really unfortunate because it's people's lives. But Korea doesn't have necessarily the, doesn't have a gigantic immigration font to rely on. So it is birthing more Koreans is the way to create more Korea, essentially, to shore up your future. Yeah, and, I'm sure that this is interesting. You know, we talked about before the before the mics went hot, we both mentioned Lysistrata, you know, the Aristophanes comedy, quote unquote, from ancient Greece, which I think if you have sort of a public school education from the 80s and 90s, this might be something you came across where, you know, essentially the text for Lysistrata was that women had colluded with each other to abstain from sex with their husbands to essentially tamp out a war, because whatever part of Greece they were in, they thought if they essentially hobble the men, handicap the men, if they're all sex starved, it is going to, and the idea that the chit that the women have was withholding sex, they were going to be able to essentially stop the war. And that's why it's a Greek comedy from the old days. And I mean, this seems like it's less a negotiation and more a surrender, or at least a withdrawal, like saying that's like, well, we would rather be lonely. It's funny. We'd rather be lonely, childless, unmarried, et cetera, than have to deal with relationships with male human beings in Korea and on the Korean Peninsula south of the 48th parallel. And, you know, it's not any place that I ever see like what that actually would mean for somebody who's choosing to make it like in their childbearing years, essentially saying that I'm going to be lonely, or I'm going to just whatever you might need from a relationship, albeit an imperfect one or a perfect one, you're saying I'm just not going to have anything to do with it in the first place. So I think that my research was a little incomplete because this just really seemed like I was watching a lot of white people react to it with hyperbolic points of view. And some people were very, you know, moderate about it. They were very mild. But, you know, I think that the core of this is that there is the idea that it is extensively patriarchal culture. Korea is, by our accounting, I was going to say weird, but I don't want that to sound like I'm making a judgment about the place. When we talked about BTS and K-pop, one of the things that I learned was that it was only like in the 1980s that the civilization opened up. They went from a dictatorship, a Christian dictatorship under Syngman Rhee, to something closer to the Western, you know, its neighbors, places like Taiwan and Japan and not necessarily China, but you get the point. And so, you know, Korea is a newer country. It's a shake and bake modernity, Western modernity that was, you know, imposed after Syngman Rhee. But there's still these ideas, the old Pacific Rim, old Asian culture, stuff that's been handed down for 1,000 years is still heavily in play. And, you know, the jangle between modernity, you know, the YouTubers and TikTokers and people who write books and who are real, you know, third and fourth wave Korean feminists bumping up against the wall of, you know, Korean masculinity and Korean bad behavior and the sort of the privileges of what they say in terms of like Korean boy children getting enough rope to hang themselves and everyone around them on. So look, this is, it's really interesting. I mean, we don't usually tend to talk about something this serious. I like the frivolity of like Cowboy Carter, like you say. This is something weird and something big. And again, something so, it touches us because again, we can see what it's about, even if it's taking place very far away in a much smaller population with its own set of endemic issues. So yeah, I'm curious, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, with the big proviso that it's probably more hype than real, but there is something real here. And I respect these women for standing up to a system that sounds pretty unfair and unjust. I mean, I have no doubt that these horror stories are, you know, indicative, are not just random outliers and actually indicative of a pretty toxic patriarchal culture. And I certainly, you know, watching the guys on TikTok who are talking about, a common refrain is like, well, you're giving up the protection of men, so you're going to regret it. I mean, that's just toxic.
They need protection from men. We're the ones who are going to kill them.
I know. Well, that's the like protection from whom? Yeah. So I don't trust the criticism of this. I mean, also, even if it's 50,000 women, it's such a small number that, you know, it's insignificant. So fine, stand up for what you believe and take care of yourself. How can I blame that? So I don't trust criticism. But on the other hand, the women who are quote unquote supporting this on TikTok, they're not much better. They're pretty annoying too. And there's one woman who's going, who was basically accepting it as a matter of faith that the low birth rate was because of the 4B movement.
She's like, yeah, that's erroneous. Yeah.
And I'm like, come on. Like, and like, we need the 4B movement here. Like, well, you know, we kind of have had it and do have it, maybe do have it, but have had it. I'll get to that in a minute. But in general, you know, this is depressing. I mean, even if it's, you know, my hats off to these women for standing up for themselves and look, you do you, you protect yourself, right? Like, mentally, physically, whatever you need to do to get through the day, like, okay, but it's depressing that it's not women trying to I mean, it shouldn't be their responsibility to fix men. Men should fix themselves. Society should fix men. But it's depressing that they're giving up. Because, and not that I blame them for giving up, but it's depressing that they feel this need. Because human connection is so important. Love and sex are great. And childbirth is needed. I mean, even if the world's coming to an end, childbirth is needed. It's a nihilistic movement. And it's sad whenever anyone turns to nihilism. I mean, yeah, sure, love and sex will always happen. And I'm sure some of these women who are dedicating themselves to the movement now will stray, or, you know, they're inevitably going to have to interact with men on some level. And at some point, I'm sure some woman is, you know, these women can't all be lesbians. So the women who aren't lesbians at some point will meet a guy that they like and turns them on and makes them feel safe. And, you know, they'll run off with him and hopefully have a good experience or whatever. But it is sad that the world has primed us to accept a nihilistic movement like this.
Korean women literally just gave up on their men. They're like, they're fucking assholes, they're not gonna change, so we're all gonna go extinct. Which they literally are, by the way. Korea has like the lowest birth rates in the world.
Noah, tell me, why is this popular either in Korea or in the American peninsula?
Kind of since Me Too, but even before that, I know several women who live life according to some version of this. I know a woman who basically gave up on dating. I mean, she likes men. She's friends with me. You know, she's friends with men and she's heterosexual. She even told me she tried sex with a woman once and got nothing out of it. And occasionally like picks up a guy or whatever, because she likes sex. But I also heard a friend told me her friend, something that really made me sad. Her friend had given up on dating because she was like 50 years old and looked back and said, a man has never improved my life. And that's really sad. Really. I mean, I don't know. Maybe this woman's really a lesbian or really asexual. I don't know. But assuming she actually is, you know, biologically heterosexual, and I believe in that. I believe in biological basis for sexual orientation. Like, I don't know. It's sad to say that, but I kind of believe it, you know. Part of the reason this, I think, is gaining traction, or certainly the reason people are talking about it here, is, you know, our version of this, which I guess is Me Too. I think a lot of Me Too was Trump getting elected. I think if he had not gotten elected, it wouldn't have gotten the traction it did. You know, like, I mean, at this point, adjudicated rapist as president, at least at the time, a, you know, confirmed sexist became president. And then, of course, the power of social media to amplify individual voices. And I imagine in Korea, President Yoon is a version of that. You know, seeing someone like that become president has emboldened women to stand up in a way that they didn't feel bold enough or you know, necessary enough to do in the past. The high profile cases that I referenced, and I'm sure there are many others, have made that feel more urgent. And then people talk about on social media, look, it's the guys who are clapping back against it, or even their women. I saw a woman clapping back against it. You know, I mean, there are a lot of really misogynistic women, that's for sure. People always want to beat up on women. They are, you know, as someone said, they are the N-word of the world. Men always want to express their grievances, and, you know, women are being emboldened. So I think the time for this anywhere in the developed world is ripe. And the combination of these events happening in Korea and maybe this president is feeling it as well. But it's not, as I hinted before, it's not new. And I'm reminded of some old, not old, but going back to like second wave feminism in the 60s, there were varieties of feminism called radical feminism and lesbian separatism. They're not quite the same thing, but I think they overlapped. These women who were basically saying, like, we're done with men, no more men, separate from the different level. You know, some even formed communities, places where I think some of them still live, although they're aging now, where no men were allowed. And some of these places wouldn't even allow male infants. And some of these places wouldn't allow male visitors. And the idea is, fuck it, men suck. We're going to build society without them. And I guess they're just leaving childbirth to other people, or they're nihilistic. They're like, this is what we're going to do until the world ends, which is, some people have embraced that for a lot of reasons now. There have been radical movements for a long time, you know, like many, many extreme political movements. Social media has brought them to the fore. So this is not new in some respect. And maybe, you know, you said Korea is a young culture in some respects. Maybe this is their, maybe this is part of their second wave feminism. And, you know, they're finally standing up to the real old school patriarchy the way women here did in the 60s.
Well, yeah, it's on the heels of Me Too, which was an international thing. And Me Too had different traction in different countries. And, you know, like I've seen close to here in Holland, I don't know how much of a groundswell it got, but I know that, for instance, across the border into France, is that people feel like it didn't go nearly far enough. And there was more than enough traction and more than enough offenders that didn't have their day in court, the court of public opinion, at least, in terms of Me Too. You know, France is essentially, every single male there is a cigarette smoking, ass grabbing, you know, pervert, as we know from the French to be throughout the course of history. But I mean,
Pepe Le Pew was surprisingly realistic.
I mean, look, people feel like drastic measures are necessary, right? And they turn off the spigot. And I mean, it makes me think that it's equal parts self-preservation, but also punishment. You know, there's the idea of you're saving yourself from hazard, and I think you want to let people know how bad you want to hurt them the way you've been hurt, you know? And I think that if there is a moment where lashing out or essentially trying to inflict pain on somebody else isn't necessarily restorative, and maybe there's sometimes where it is, where the line may be is not really for me to say, because I don't really know. But it's funny thinking about radical feminism in particular. You know, there was when I met my wife, she had a bunch of books on her shelf that were from like, yeah, second waivers, late 60s, early 70s, radical feminists. And, you know, there was this one person in particular named Shulamith Firestone, who I don't know how obscure she is. I'd never heard of her before. And she's been dead now for about.
I've heard her name, but couldn't tell you.
Yeah, she's been dead for about, you know, she was, I think she was gay.
See what being a feminist gets you? She's dead now.
She was.
I bet she regrets that now.
She was a gay Jew, so that should make you feel at home already.
Even more so.
She had a lot of really, what was it called? Xenofeminism. It was a really strange. Well, I say strange because it was unusual to me. Where it's like the only way for true equity to happen between the sexes was that childbirth and procreation. Not procreation, but the idea of. Having babies and carrying babies needs to be divorced from both genders. So it was this argument in sort of almost like a Ray Bradbury.
So what, robots need to raise babies?
Artificial wombs, where women's bodies were not.
Yeah, but someone's still got to raise the baby. Well, someone's still got to feed and take care of the baby and change his fucking diaper.
No, but that's like both sexes can do that, or whatever you want to say. Both sexes, but it had to do, it's like the body that the baby was coming from or being carried inside of, these people, the equation with being made is that was essentially the single arbiter of all of the inequity between the sexes, is that women are the only people who can carry babies.
Right.
And so it's like once
the fact that women get pregnant is the only reason for sexism when you get to the root. Yeah, maybe.
Don't look at me. Look at Shulamith Firestone. It's too late now. So yeah, the hard gender separation, the sort of like taking birthing away. I mean, there's a hoary tradition of these things. And, you know, again, there's a lot of discussion that goes back a long way. It has a lot of different ideas and a lot of different expressions. This is just one of them.
When you search up the term on TikTok, you will not see one single Korean person being like, yes, this is me right now. This is me. I'm 4B. As someone who has lived in Korea for 4 years, the first and only time I've ever heard about this movement is from TikTok.
If you were a young man now, would you... I mean, I assume you wouldn't be a member of the 4B movement. I don't know how that would work. But would you be posting videos on TikTok talking about your opinion? And I saw a man who was praising it. So not necessarily men, you know, most of the men shitting on it. But yeah. Like, would you be expressing your social media opinions on the 4B movement in any form whatsoever?
Well, I don't think they'd be opinions somebody would be interested in hearing, though, is the problem. You know,
But your opinions now, no one's interested in hearing.
So. And that, right, and that's the thing. The irony is that I never stop issuing those opinions. There's more of them now, and they've never mattered so little. It's been devalued like the peso. It's crazy.
The older we get,
it's like the Egyptian dollar over here. You pay by the pound of food, not necessarily by the pound of the paperweight, not necessarily the pound of the currency. But I don't think I would have engaged with it because I didn't have any empathy. I think that I remember being kids in the 80s and thinking that because the girls got to go to the menstruation sort of symposium, how, I forget how old we would have been. That would have been 86 or so, where they were starting to try to explain to girls, you're going to start bleeding soon, and here's maxi pads and tampons and all that stuff. And I remember we all kind of like lost our heads saying there was something special, there was some sort of dispensation that the girls got on account of them being girls.
And it's so unfair. They get to, they get to bleed every month and we don't. Exactly. It's so unfair.
And it's like we were just such, I mean, look, it's dumb and it's short-sighted, it's stupid, and it was exactly how I don't know a single boy at that age who fell on the other side of the issue. It just felt like it was special treatment, like girls were somehow being coddled by female teachers. They got the special treatment, they did all the stuff, and it's like, I had very little empathy.
Are you serious? The opinion was you guys were jealous that girls menstruated and you didn't.
Well, no, it had nothing nothing to do with the menstruation, because I'm not quite sure we understood why. What was the thing that girls were being shown in a film reel? You know, it was you know, gender.
Oh, so they got like a special meeting in a classroom.
Yes, exactly. It was something exclusive, and so it felt like it was against us. Like I said, when a kid, it really depends on. I would have needed to be a girlfriend haver. I would have needed to be sort of in the dating lane that I understood women intimately before I could even begin to crawl up into this idea of empathy. Because, you know, I think from being the age where we realized there were biological differences between their bodies, and like you say, the whole idea of what menstruation is, or again, there's just something exclusive that is going on inside girls' bodies that wasn't happening in ours. I mean, you know, just too much of a pinhead at that point. So as a kid, no, I think I would have been very uncharitable. And I mean, even would become mouth breathing, sort of like over-sexualized yet sex-deprived teenagers who, you know, would like scratch and claw for a Penthouse magazine. You know, I don't think that empathy with the woman is exactly what we were known for back on Long Island in the late 80s. You know what I mean? So this would have been a tough sell, I think.
Well, no, but see, you might have been the guy who's posting videos saying that these women are stupid and counterproductive idiots and they're destroying humanity.
If I had the boldness to essentially tip my hand and say, it's like, well, fuck it. I mean, now people don't really pay for these things, but it's like when we were a kid, you know, I don't know. I feel like it was all, there used to be a thing in society called shame, and it used to sort of somehow curb people's worst impulses. It doesn't have that effect now, but we still live in a world where I feel like it does.
I've said on the show many times that, like, I'm really glad I'm not young now. I mean, for the most part, because I think some of my opinions back then were like borderline incel-y. And I'm really afraid that, like, in the world of today, I'd be tipped over into that world and have turned into a terrible time.
I think we were all incel-y. It's just that we weren't given guns. No, you know, we couldn't fucking kill people.
I literally had some thoughts that I'm really ashamed of now.
I didn't treat people that way. I hear you.
I mean, I don't remember saying anything to women, but I definitely remember saying things that are really, like, horrifying. And saying to myself, thinking. So I can imagine posting a video, because of course I would post videos very young now, because I still want attention. And saying, like, you know, what's the term for it? The people who are like, You need to get your act together, like faux concern. Like, I'm only criticizing you because I'm concerned about you, kind of thing. You know, telling women, like, you're going to regret this. You know, because a piece that I feel like we didn't hear about enough reading about this is like, all right, assuming most of these women are not lesbians, you know, what about sexual desire? And yeah, like, women can compartmentalize sexual desire better than men. And like, that friend of a friend I know who, you know, like sex, but like, men have never added to her life. So she just, you know, puts sexual desire into a lockbox. It is a generalization. So some women, you know, how are they going to feel about the fact that, all right, I'm leaving men forever. I'm never going to get laid again. You know, like, how is that acceptable to them? So I could see myself tissing women about that. Like, well, you're going to deny us sex. We're going to deny you sex. You know, you can't fire me. I fire you first. That kind of thing. So I could see myself posting really obnoxious videos like that, engaging with them in that manner. So, yeah, thank God I'm an old man.
We should not be getting our information about the 4B movement from Westerners on TikTok. Some of you probably see my face and are assuming I'm now going to explain the 4B movement, but I'm not going to. because I am a Westerner.
Tell me if this is a sign of the apocalypse. I feel like between this and the eclipse, maybe we are actually talking about the firstborn sons getting carried away. This might actually be apocalypse, but how do I know?
I mean, yeah, I could say literally. I mean, clearly it's not, you know, I think it's highly unlikely it's the reason for the low birth weight in South Korea. Though, I don't know, maybe it's a chicken and egg thing, right? Like, women started having less babies economically, but also partly because men are such shitheads. And then that fuels, you know, women going, oh, we don't need to have babies. Look at this. No one's having babies. So we can separate from men. And then people saying, well, that's leading to not, you know, the low birth rate, et cetera. So I think there's some connection. Yeah, you could say literally this is the end of the world if no one has babies and we die out as a race, you know, as a species. But there will always be holdouts because, you know, wanting to have a child is one of the most natural things in the world. Sex is one of the few things more natural than that. So people are always going to bonk and always going to impregnate and want to have kids and all that. Yeah, these women are only humans. So some of them will stray. So even if every woman signed a 4B pledge on Earth, we would still have babies, probably enough to, you know, keep at least some of the human race going. But I don't know. I don't really think this is the end of the world and might actually be a good thing.
I gotta agree with you. I mean, it seems drastic just because, you know, we're giving it the heat of a sort of podcast that has been fueled by TikToks talking about this kind of thing. Drastic is a, you know, general term, I suppose. But I mean, if you were part of this beleaguer group, which is, of course, women, not just Korean women, I guess, because there's got to be something everyone could relate to here. Is, you know, they felt that they were continually targeted for generations and generations of this sort of muck that's been living in Korean culture. You know, used, treated like a hand towel, you know, just used, thrown away, and or given very little respect, you know. Maybe we'd have the same idea if we were going through that same thing as well. But, I mean, I'm going to come back to the sample serving of this to say the actual 4B as a phenomenon, I think, is demographically, statistically, it's a drop in the bucket. And I'm not worried about, well, again, you know, America right now is driving headlong into making sure that women are being turned into, you know, brood mares. It's just essentially supposed to be a baby making factory.
Yeah, but what about her emails, Bill? What about her emails?
I voted for Kodos. Yeah.
Don't blame me.
Yeah, so that stuff is really, you know, that's dreadful. Loathing and fear is always predicated by this idea that there are so many women who vote and act against their own best self-interest and the interest of other women too, you know. And it's like, look, I'm not saying women who have this overwhelming need to have a child, you know, and damn everything else, like, by all means, that's something you need to do. But when you are actually trying to, you know, when you act in a way that codifies laws and you know, continues mores that are destructive and, you know, that demeaning of human life and dignity, that's another fucked up thing, which is like, that goes beyond just wanting to have a child and, you know, obeying this reproductive sense inside of you. That's something completely different than Insidious. That might be apocalyptic.
In my feed, I've been getting a lot of white women saying, oh, 4B movement in Korea, blah, blah, blah. Well, let me tell you, the 4B movement in Korea is nothing like the white feminism and the feminist movement in America.
Bill, so is there any extent to which you are jealous of anything inherent in or related to the 4B movement? Bihan, Bione, Bicholsan, Bisekasu. Bisexu.
Yeah. I thought that was originally bisexual, but, you know, like, no, the B and the bi are two different things.
No, it's different. Yeah. I don't think bi are prefixes related to their prefix. So.
No, that's true.
You never know. Language is a funny thing.
It didn't really get under my skin. That's why I wondered how arcane this topic was going to be. I mean, but then the personal thing of, like, I don't want anything to do with this on either side. You know, I don't want to be the response to a shitty relationship that some woman would feel like they need to do this as a recompense or, you know, tip the karmic scales. And I would never want to feel the sort of like stern and strict level of aggrievement that this is what I'd be driven to do. I don't see an in either way, just as like a cultural observer wondering, yeah, I guess, you know, like, we can look at this and say, does this augur something in the culture wars that's going to start crossing over borders? Is it an idea that could essentially be just you know, organically ginned up, whether you're in Azerbaijan or Paraguay or Korea, you know, this could happen anywhere. You don't need to have it communicated, transferred by Korean people. I'm sure there's a lot of women who are treated shitty everywhere who would come up with the same idea as a bulwark and say, well, what if we formed a sort of league of people who say, fuck it, fuck dating, fuck marriage, you know, fuck childbirth and all that stuff, fuck sex, I don't know. But no, I don't have any way in here in particular. I'm kind of going to leave this one off to the side, I think.
Yeah, no, the only thing I'm jealous of is the lack of shame that people can go out in social media and just be the biggest douchebags, whether they're expressing things I think are incredibly toxic or okay. Just everyone comes off as such a fucking piece of shit. They have that confidence. And I wish I had half of that so that I could use it for good and moderate it. I mean, that's why I'm jealous of like everyone we talk about on the show. So no, I'm not really jealous. I'm just, I don't know. I wish I could. I wish I was a little bolder. I mean, look at us. We're apologizing for every opinion we offer on this fucking show. It's our show. You know, I wish we didn't feel the need to do that. So.
Well, what about
You don't like it? To turn it off. You don't like it.
And how about the scale, Noah? Where does the strange, jagged, abstract topic appear on the Thelonian scale?
Well, you know, this is, in some respects, this is kind of a mirror image of a topic we talked about not long ago, which is trad wives, which is this women leaning into the patriarchy, according to some interpretations. So take trad wives, multiply that by -1. So now you're pretty high up on the positive scale. And I don't think it's that high. So subtract something else that's related to women but kind of insignificant, which is Stanley Cups, and then subtract a little more. So subtract another 4.62. So the formula is tradwise times -1 minus Stanley Cups minus 4.62. And that's where you find the 4B movement. 4B equals, this is an algebra problem. The thing I just said equals 4B. Figure it out.
4B is the, it's almost like algebraically, that's the symbol.
Exactly.
4B.
It's the beta version of the breadcrumbs.
Yeah. Or as they say, solve for B, solve for X. That's the thing. By the way, don't confuse this with 4H too. That's a very different thing along the way.
4H. Yes.
We have a 4H problem. Still.
Or well, Triple H or.
The guy from wrestling, Triple H.
The guy from wrestling.
I thought about something that I actually liked that was high up. I took Impossible Burgers, and then I thought, inspired by a divine Tarnovian sense of algebra and integers, I decided to minus something that I needed to come down from it, but I wanted to use another topic. And so I subtracted CBD oil, which I personally didn't like, right? So I took something that was kind of good that I liked, and I subtracted the amount of something I didn't really vibe with, CBD oil. But I still recognize that a lot of people do like CBD oil. It's become a real tonic, a real balm to people. So I think somewhere in the middle, it just sort of adjusts the good value of Impossible Burgers, because it's like I wanna like blow on the sparks and sort of give it some air. If this is in fact a good, healthy thing. If 4B, drastic though it may be, may sort of spur a discussion, it could wind up being a net positive if it's sort of if the reckoning happens. So it's like maybe it could get up to Impossible Burgers if it sort of grows and blossoms into something. But yeah, I was sort of inspired by what Noah usually does, and so you've changed my life in that respect.
Thank you, Bill. I'm flattered. So do you think? Sorry, to add one more thing. Do you think this is gonna, like, people are still going to talk about this? Do you think this is going to grow the way Me Too did?
No, because I think Me Too, even Me Too, which was a gigantic thing, and Me Too and, you know, Pussy Hats in 2016. Still is. Yeah, instead of 2017, whatever it was. It's like, I think that those wound up inspiring such horrible backlash that people still use today. That is the sort of, I don't want to say a secret or a silent simmer, but I think it really reinforces a lot of shitty things that are happening in our blighted age that people use.
I think you're right.
I mean, I'm not.
If this thing really if this thing really goes mainstream, the backlash is going to be
rude. I'm not saying, don't do something because of the backlash. You know, you're afraid of the backlash, but it's like, unfortunately, anticipate the backlash and categorize it, catalog it whenever you get the chance.
Be
ready for it. All right, so that takes us to the end of yet another one. We are here. We are at the finish. We're at the end. The end of all things. So, if you'd like to find past
episodes... That's not the end of the podcast. We're going to do another episode. Well, the end. You're making it sound like this is the end of the show.
You
forever.
Can look for past episodes on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud.
You don't care. You don't care.
I heard Google Play was going to delist podcasts. I'm not really sure if that was true. I don't know. It's weird. I can't really tell. This is boilerplate. I never go back and look at it. So, yeah, tweet to us at NoUnbillShow. Write to us, NoUnbillDon'tGetIt@gmail.com. Reviews are a good way. It inspires heat. People find podcasts because other people find podcasts. Someday it'll happen. We're really waiting on it. It'll be there. We're holding our breath. I'm on Twitter at William Scurry. I'm on Insta. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on Letterboxd. I'm everywhere you can want to find a movie nerd. A doughy feminist movie nerd. I'm all over the place. And YouTube.com/IamCaesar. There's videos and stuff I make. Things I upload. Things I find. I'm trying to just be a goofy fun uncle for America. Anyway, so where's Noah? Where can people find him?
I can be found at BigQuizThing.com. America's finest source for corporate and private live trivia events, nationwide, worldwide, in-person, hybrid, virtual. And what else do I got going on? I'm trying to Instagram again, at the Noah Tarno. Not very often. You know, check it every few days.
If you've got cat videos, man. Cat pictures. That's going to put you over the top.
I do have cat pictures.
Yeah, that's
a
big deal.
I'm a cat picture kind of guy.
Cat daddy, big deal.
Wish me luck. I'm going on an intense diet the next 2 weeks, so wish me luck. It's going to be fun, Bill. It's going to be really fun.
Hear that, America? He's doing this for you. He's trying to slim down to his college weight.
Yeah, I know exactly. Do you know that Aaron Grunfeld, listener of the show, years ago he had this girlfriend, and we pulled a prank on her. We convinced her that in college I weighed 350 pounds, and I lost all the weight. I just went on a diet after college and just stayed off. And she believed it for few months until I got to let slip something.
Yeah. Steam broccoli and brown rice. It was a miracle for you.
That's it. That's all it did. Yeah, just steam. I went on the Subway diet. I'd have a turkey sub every night for dinner. What was the diet? He ate no breakfast, and he ate lunch and dinner at Subway. Is that how Jerry lost the weight?
Yeah, and pederasty, that helps too. It really helps to burn calories.
I was trying to avoid it, and I should have known you would go there.
You can't do it. It's not going to happen.
Unfortunately, you can't. The guy did lose the weight, though. Hey, OJ's no less of a running back. Am I right?
OJ.
Oh, poor OJ.
All right, so until the next episode, where we talk about the 4G movement, where people swear off Wi-Fi and broadband telecom forever,
we don't get it.
An American Caesar Enterprises production, 2024.